216-749-6611 or visit MiddlefieldWindowAndDoors.com.
Gather a mob and enter GodTube's Flash Mob Contest for a chance to win $1,500. During the month of May, visit GodTube.com.
The following program's views, claims, and or representations may not necessarily reflect those of AM 1220 The Word or Salem Communications.
AM 1220 The Word. Hi there, I'm Glenn Mertz. Welcome to Living the Word, a program where we talk to people who are living the Word. And thanks for being here on this Wednesday morning. Coming up on today's program, we'll talk with Crystal Waters. She's a local author and playwright. We'll talk about her latest work. We'll also talk about her faith. And then coming up at 11 o'clock, we'll talk about thriving at college with Professor Alex Chediak. It's happening next on Living the Word on AM 1220. The Word.
For 1 week only through May 24th, visit the Spring Auction House at WHKWradio.com. Great products and services at auction prices. Here is just a sample of what's up for bid.
A Voyager Fort backyard playground with half clubhouse porch from Bennett's Ultra Built Play Systems. A $3,879 value starting at under $2,000.
A custom fabricated and installed granite countertop valued at $2,500. Choose from over 100 colors from the Forenza Stone inventory starting at just $750.
Unique, beautiful lighting fixtures from Lighting Liquidators.
A $1,600 queen memory foam pillow top mattress set with box foundation starting at under $500.
School tuition enrollment for one new student to Chapel Hill Christian School for the 2011-2012 school year.
Celebrate 50 years of classic theater in Cleveland at the Hanna Theater Playhouse Square with tickets to your choice of shows at Great Lakes Theater Festival.
The bidding starts for most items at just 30% of retail. This auction closes Tuesday at 6 p.m. Click the auction house link at WHKWradio.com.
Coppertop at Cherokee Hills is home of the hassle-free golf outing. The GPS carts include yardage and a real-time leaderboard. Outing packages include food, beverage, and gratuity starting at only $58 per person. The Coppertop restaurant is open to the public daily from 7 a.m., where meals are made with fresh ingredients in a warm setting with magnificent views. Coppertop specializes in weddings, reunions, parties, and business meetings for groups 8 to 275. For outing packages, catering packages, or menus, visit CherokeeHillsGolf.com or call 330-225-6122.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? With Visiting Angels America's Choice in Senior Home Care, your parents and older family members can continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours per day at affordable rates. To restore your family's peace of mind, call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE or at visitingangels.com.
Are you in need of prayer? How about getting your praise on? Reverend A. Charles Bowie of the East Mount Zion Baptist Church, located at 9990 Euclid Avenue, will deliver the word God has given to him, especially for you. Listen in at 9 o'clock a.m. every Sunday morning on WHK 1220. You don't want to miss this blessing.
Do you have a fun, creative idea for a flash mob? Gather your friends and join the 30 Days of GodTube Flash Mob Contest for a chance to win $1,500. Upload your video May 16th through May 20th. Then ask friends, family, and church members to vote for your video beginning May 23rd. For more information, visit GodTube.com. It's 30 Days of GodTube. Go now to GodTube.com.
Hey, I'm 1220 The Word, and welcome back to Living the Word. My name is Glenn Mertz, as always. Thanks for being part of our radio family. I want to welcome to the studio Crystal Waters. She's a local author and playwright, and she's got a new book out called Courage for the Soul. And Crystal, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much, Glenn, and I also want to thank you for the opportunity. I don't take it for granted.
Oh, absolutely. We're just here having fun.
Yes.
You're a busy person.
Yes, I am.
Wow, you got the book, you've got a play coming out. I mean, you know, how do you keep all this in line?
Well, God orders my steps and he gives me strength to put it all together because I prayed and I asked God, show me what you want me to do.
Hmm.
and I will do what you want me to do for your glory.
Yeah.
And I just want God to get the glory out of whatever I do.
You have to have a bit of courage for that, don't you?
Yes.
Because you never know what God's going to want you to do. I mean, right. I'm so afraid of that.
Right. And I was. Yeah. Because I said, Lord, maybe this will be too much. Or maybe my book won't be accepted because of some of the things that it covers. But he said, go.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. And this is what I want you to do. And ever since then, I've been on the move.
We've talked about this in this program before, but you know, a lot of people will say, well, I think God wants me to do this, or they'll already have in their mind that they're going to do it no matter what.
Right.
And then expect God to bless that, whether
right.
God wants them to do it or not.
Right.
But you listen.
Yes. I want to listen to the voice of God because I don't want to go ahead of him and then do something that he told me that was not for me to do because it's ultimately not about me. It's about God's people, and I want to bless God's people with what he's telling me to do.
Yeah. We all have talents, and God wants us to use them, right?
Yes.
Well, you certainly did with your newest book called Courage for the Soul. Tell us about that.
Courage for the Soul is a collection of 40 inspirational and powerful poetry, and God really put it together. And I am so blessed to be able to say that I'm a first-time author. And this book touches on many different subjects, such as many types of abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, mental abuse. And then I also have some lighthearted, encouraging poetry just to let you know that God is with you and that he loves you. So I touch on many different subjects, but I believe that there's something in here for everyone to relate to.
How long did it take you to write this?
It took me, I started writing it in 2003 is when I started writing poetry. And the book was published in 2010.
Yeah, you can't really, I guess in your mind, say, you know what, I'm going to today sit down and write a book of poetry and then write it. It is a process, isn't it? Especially
yes,
with
it
poetry,
is.
It's different from writing a story, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
What would you like to read? I know you had something that you wanted to read. You want to read one of your poems out
yes,
of that?
Yes, this is called Believe.
Okay.
And I just want to encourage your listeners to believe in and know that God is with you. So this is called Believe.
Okay.
When there's nothing left to say or do, we must believe. When our path is dark and cloudy and we can't see our way, we must believe. Situations come that we don't understand, but we still must believe. Believe in the strength and courage that lies within. Never give up because you can win. Never stop believing in you, no matter what you go through. Believe in him and you'll go far because to him you're a shining star. Though trials come and you may have to cry, but still trust and believe in him and you'll get by. When all else fails and you don't know what to do, just believe. And he will see you through.
That is Crystal Waters from Courage for the Soul, her newest book. And just real quick, where can we pick that up at?
You can pick this up at any online bookstore, such as Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble's. And you can also pick it up at exlibers.com. And they are the publishing company that has published this book. And you can also order it at any local bookstore.
Okay. You also have a play coming out, too, and I want to talk about that here in
yes.
a minute. But first, can we talk about your faith journey?
Yes.
About you're raised in the church?
Yes, I was.
What was that like? Did you know Jesus then your whole life?
Yes. My mother, she sang in the choir, and my father, he was a deacon. And so we were raised in the church. But when I got older, even though I was raised in the church, they had instilled in me that faith and that belief in God. So when I got older, I established a real relationship on my own with the Lord.
Kind of a slow road to sanctification?
Yes.
There's, you know, I was also raised in the church. I talk to people that have had that road to Damascus moment where they, you know, they didn't believe for many years, and then all of a sudden they do, and they seem to have this joy to them.
Right.
And I've always wanted to try to, you know, what is that like? Have you ever had the same thing?
Yes. When I started going to church, you know, when your parents make you go.
Yeah. I've been there.
You have to go.
Yeah.
So when they make you go, it's kind of boring to you until something real happens in your life when you get older and you start to have your own personal relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes the difference because I'm not forced to go to church.
Yeah.
I have my own faith and my own belief in God, and I want to serve him.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad my parents did, though.
Yes, me too.
You know, I am so blessed I have a couple of parents, and I know you are too, to
yes.
take us to church, because you never know where we'd be at today if they didn't, right?
Right, because God is my strength. He's my strength, and he is who I look to when I need somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Because just because you have family, they can't always be there for you.
Yeah.
In the way that God can. He's always there. And I thank him for being there for me. And I thank God for my parents because they did instill in me that walk with God. And not only did they instill that in me, but they walked with the Lord as well.
Mm.
So not only did they bring me to church, but I saw them walking with the Lord as well. And that makes a difference as well.
That's important for kids, isn't it?
To see their parents
walking
with the Lord, not just sending them to church,
mm-hmm.
but them having a relationship with God as well.
Yeah.
To be that example.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, if you're a parent and you're going to church every Sunday and you're not living it during the week, your kids see that.
Right. And they pick up on it and they say, well, if mom can do this,
mm-hmm.
or if dad can do this, well, why can't I?
Yeah. I could be a Christian and do all these things that go completely against the Christian faith.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's a terrible example. Your faith journey, you're thinking about putting into a book, your life, an autobiography.
Yes, and all the different things that I have encountered in my life. And it's just a avenue to encourage other people. And that's what I want to do with my books and my plays and whatever else God has instructed me to do, is just to provide strength and courage to his people.
Yeah. Is it difficult to look back on your life, to go back and relive things maybe that you don't want to relive?
It is to a point,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes you have to go through that to get to where God wants you to be. And like I said, our testimony is not just for us, but it's for other people. You know, and our testimony is not just for us. It's for other people to let them know that I went through this, but God was with me, and just like he was with me, he'll be with you.
Yeah. You have a play?
Yes.
That is out now?
Yes.
That's ready to go? What is it called?
The play is called The Affair. And The Affair, it takes place in the Big Apple, New York City.
Mm.
And it's about a defense attorney and his wife of 10 years, and they have a son. And ultimately, it's about how sin creeps into their family due to his infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it creeps in is through an accident that his son has. And I can't give it all away, but the son is in an accident, and that starts the family crumbling. Because mm-hmm. when tragedy happens, either one or two things happen. Either it brings your family close together, or it divides them.
Yep.
And in this case, it divided the family. Mm-hmm. And sin came in and just started wreaking havoc on this family.
So we see the consequences of sin then.
Yes.
Yeah. It's called The Affair. Now, it's a play that is available for churches or for anyone to be able to perform, or how does this work?
Yes, it's available for anyone that would like to get involved.
Okay.
And you can reach me on my website, and that's www.crystalwatersproductions.com. com, and you can send me your information on the website, and I will get back with you as to the criteria for the play.
Okay. You also have a couple other plays, too. You, like I said, you're busy.
Yes, I am.
What are the other two plays you've done?
In 2008, I was blessed to do Courage to Fly. And that, it came from, if you believe this or not, it came from a poem that I wrote. And God just manifested it into a play.
Wow.
And we did that 2008, and that was the very first play that I had put on. And I was accompanied by Mount Calvary, Second Baptist Church in Canton, and they helped me put on the play.
Hmm. And then the other one is The Gift?
The Gift. And we put that out in 2009.
Wow.
And The Gift is a gift. The Gift is about forgiveness, and it's about how this mother and daughter, they had a rift in their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the mother's 65th birthday, and the daughter that she was having problems with comes into town and surprises her on her birthday.
Mm.
And during that time, they sit down and they have this conversation, and they forgive one another for the falling out that they had. And that was The Gift.
Mm.
The Gift was the gift of forgiveness.
I have not read the play, but I would imagine that probably in there, forgiveness was tough.
Yes, forgiveness was tough. And sometimes when you are faced with certain things, you want to forgive because you know that it's the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're hurt and when you're in pain and when you're angry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That forgiveness is tough.
And we say, you know, oh, no, I forgave that person a long time ago. But if you keep bringing it up, something's wrong there.
Right.
You probably didn't do the whole forgiveness thing, right?
Right. And, you know, and forgiveness, I've heard people say that it's not giving that person a free ticket to say, not a free ticket, but it's not for that other person. The forgiveness is for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The forgiveness is to free you, because when you're bound by unforgiveness, you can't go forward in what God wants you to do because you're bound by unforgiveness. So that forgiveness is for you and for you to be free.
Yeah, it is. And even though we forgive someone, you know it's still in your mind.
Yes.
You may not bring it up, but you know it's still there.
Yes.
And that just, and when you look at God's forgiveness, that he doesn't even remember it anymore.
No.
It's completely wiped out. I mean, it's tough for us to wrap our head around, isn't it?
And, you know, God's forgiveness is, he doesn't bring it up. He doesn't throw it in your face.
Yeah.
You know what you did.
Mm.
You know, he doesn't remind you of what you did. You know, we remind ourselves because it's hard for us to even forgive ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But forgiveness is forgiving the other person and also forgiving yourself.
Mm.
We tend to not forgive ourselves either. And that can hold us back.
God has put on your heart a number of possible nonprofits that you'd like to get going.
Yes.
And let's start out with the one that you really, close to your heart, I would imagine. And that is Coming Out of the Dark.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Coming Out of the Dark is a program that will allow people who have been incarcerated to come out and find jobs and get on their feet. And that is really close to my heart, because when someone comes out of prison, they have nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and their mistake strips them of everything.
Yep. Yep, you're right.
And it's hard for them to find jobs, hard for them to find housing.
Mm.
And I just feel that when you make a mistake, when you pay for it, you shouldn't keep paying for it.
Yeah.
And they continue to pay. Maybe even 20 years down the line, they continue to pay for something that they already paid for.
Is that the role our churches should be playing? To open up our doors, open up our arms and say, listen, we're here to help?
Yes. You know, and we say that we are Christians and we have the heart of God, but God forgives. God forgives and he takes us back constantly.
Mm.
And we as Christians need to have the heart of God.
Yeah.
And forgive and help people that are in need. Because just because you haven't been to prison, it doesn't mean that you'll never go.
Mm-hmm.
Because look at people that are in prison. They never thought that that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't wake up and say, I'm going to prison today.
No, I don't think anybody does that.
No one wakes up and says, I'm going to prison today. So they didn't plan what happened to them.
Mm.
They might have been at the wrong place at the wrong time, but they didn't set out to go to prison.
Yeah.
So we need to help people that are in need, and people that are coming out of prison, they are in need.
Yeah.
And they need our love and support, and they need our forgiveness.
If you're coming out of a prison and even the churches don't welcome you, if that would happen, I would imagine you become bitter. And you know, it's like, well, I don't need this God thing anymore. I mean,
right.
Look at the churches not doing it. I'm not saying that happens,
right.
But look at the potential for that happening. So that's why we need to have programs like this, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you feel like no one is there for you and you feel like, well, it's pointless to change.
Mm.
So yeah. I might as well just do what I've been doing.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. There's a couple other here. And the reason why I'm mentioning these is because if anybody wants to join hands with you, I mean, and help you with any of these, get them started or get them going or something along those lines, you'd be happy with that, right?
Yes, I would. And again, my website is www.crystalwatersproductions.com, and you can reach me there. And you can also reach me on my email, and that is crystalwatersproductions2@yahoo.com.
One that's intriguing to me is one-on-one rap, and that has to deal with the young people being able to talk about different issues in their lives.
Yes.
Young people today are going through an awful lot, aren't they?
Yes, and they need someone that they can trust to talk to and let them know what's going on in their lives. And young people want to feel that someone is there for them, you know, and someone cares about how they feel. And they want to feel comfortable with talking about things that they might be going through.
Yeah.
And so I want to provide that.
Yeah. We say, well, it'll be all right. You know, you're fine. Just keep going and just doing.
Just pray about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. Wow. Now you opened up a can of worms there. Yeah, well, that's a cop out for Christians.
It really is. We say, just pray about it. Okay. But First of all, if I don't have a relationship mm-hmm. with God, or I feel hopeless, even when you are a Christian, you feel hopeless mm-hmm. and you feel like no one is there. Well, I need words of encouragement, you know, and sometimes I feel so bogged down with life issues. Sometimes, even though, yes, it is, I should pray.
Right.
But sometimes, have you ever just went through something in your life where you feel like you can't pray?
Mm.
You just feel so hurt and
yeah.
so...
Yeah, you don't know how to say, God, I have no idea what to say here, but he knows.
He knows, but just pray about it.
Yeah.
But we need to do more than just say, just pray about
go,
it.
Go up to that person, grab their hand and say, let's pray together.
Absolutely.
Let's do that.
Absolutely. God, yeah. Show me what to say to this person. Not just let's, you know, pray about it.
Yeah.
You know, show me, give me a word of encouragement that's straight from you to tell this person, because we never know what a person is going through from the youngest to the oldest. We never know what you go home to.
Yeah. someone wants to know about Jesus, I mean, don't just hand him a Bible and say he's in the second half of the book.
Right.
Tell him a little bit about it. I mean, maybe read the Bible with him. And I'm not saying don't give anybody a Bible. I'm not saying that by any means, because God will reach them. He'll do it on his own time, at his own terms, and everything else. But, I mean, if you're going to do that, pray for him there. Pray with them. Hand him a Bible. Tell him at least, help him get started.
And not only that, share your testimony with them.
Mm, yeah.
Sometimes we don't want to share some things with someone because we're afraid of what they might say.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't go through what we went through for nothing. We didn't go through our pain and our hurt just to keep it bottled up.
It's important for us to know what we believe and why we believe it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You have a couple other here that I just want to touch on. We talked about 101 rap, coming out of the dark. The missing piece, what is that?
The missing piece is a support group for people that have lost a loved one or loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you lose someone that you truly love, that is devastating.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of times you don't know how to deal with the pain. And so this is a way to come together with others that have dealt with that same pain so that we can all work together and be a support to each other.
You have a number of other ones here, and I would invite the listeners to contact you and maybe go over these with you, see how maybe I can get some of these started. But in the meantime, pick up the book, Courage for the Soul. And again, Crystal, where can they get that at?
They can get it online, on any online bookstore, such as Amazon.com, Barnes & Nobles, and you can also get it at xlibris.com, and that's xlibris.com, and they published Courage for the Soul.
Is Believe your favorite poem in there?
Believe, and there's one that I wrote for my mother, and it's called Thank You.
Mm.
And so that's those are my two favorites.
What was the first one you wrote? You remember? Quite a while ago.
Yes.
2003. I put you on the spot.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but Courage to Fly is very special to me because that came out of that ultimately was my first play.
Right.
So that's special to me.
Did you, I mean, when you started writing poetry, did you go, I think this is going to be a book eventually, or were you just doing it because you wanted to do it?
I did it out of boredom, actually. I did it out of boredom, and when I had accumulated 40 poems, I said, well, okay, Lord, what do you want me to do with them now?
This is nice, bud.
Do you want me to share them, or do you want me to keep them and not share them? And he said, share them, because people need to read what you have written, because you're going to help people through this book. And not only is the book in hardback form, copy form, but you can also get it as an ebook as well.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. And of course, if you want to put on the play The Affair, they can also contact you too, right?
Yes.
And that's ready to go.
Yes. So it's all ready to go. I'm looking for characters to play in the play, but it's all ready.
Okay. Crystal Waters, give us your website again.
My website is www.crystalwatersproductions.com.
Crystal, thank you so much. Blessings to you and everything you're doing.
Thank you so much. And again, thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. Coming up next, we'll talk about thriving at college on AM 1220, The Word.
WHKW Cleveland, WHKZ Warren, SRN News is next on The Word, a service of Salem Communications.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. The Space Shuttle Endeavour is now docked at the International Space Station 2 days after blasting off on the next-to-last flight of the entire shuttle program. Shuttle Flight Director Gary Horlock.
The entire rendezvous, approach, RPM, and final docking was really silky smooth today. We had no anomalies to work, no problems whatsoever. Everything went really, really well.
Endeavour and its six astronauts delivering a $2 billion particle physics detector. Also at SRNnews.com, President Obama delivers another commencement address today, this time at a military academy.
The president will be in Connecticut to address graduates of the U.S. Coast Guard Academy. It's the 130th commencement ceremony at the academy. Mr. Obama will add politics to his visit to the Northeast. He'll then travel to Boston to attend two Democratic Party fundraisers.
That's SRNnews White House correspondent Greg Clugston reporting, and this is SRN News.
SRN News is sponsored by the Original Mattress Factory, 4930 State Road, right at the 480 ramp.
Over the years, Chuck Eddy has learned a lot in the car business. But the two most important things are, take excellent care of your customers and give them a great deal. That's why four generations of Eddies has been so successful over the last 41 years of launching, servicing, and selling more new Chrysler products in Eastern Ohio than anybody else. Bob and Chuck Eddies is now getting ready to open their new Fiat dealership, along with launching three more new Chrysler models, the Dodge Durango, the all-new 300, and the Jeep Compass. And while they're doing that, they want to give you a great deal. All-new 2011 Dodge Calibers, over 200 to choose from, in stock, with more coming at $4,000 off. That's right, $4,000 off on all-new Dodge Calibers. So when it comes to service, savings, selection, location, new car launches, and the best deal, it's Bob and Chuck Eddy's Austintown Chrysler, Dodge, and Jeep. And remember, you just can't beat them.
AM 12, 20 the Word, and welcome back to Living the Word. And coming up in tomorrow's program, Barbara Marlowe will be back. She'll be here with Teba. And we've talked with Barbara before, but this time she's going to be bringing Teba with her. And Teba has survived a bombing over in the Middle East. And we're going to talk about her recovery and get an update. And tune in tomorrow. We'll give you the whole story. It's... I won't be able to do it all in this short period of time, but I'm really happy to have them in tomorrow. And then on Friday's program, we will talk with June Hunt, who you hear overnights right here on WHKW with Hope in the Night. Well, are you sending anybody off to college in the fall? Or you got somebody in college now or thinking about going? Well, there's a great new book out with a biblical perspective on thriving at college. And I happen to catch up with Professor Alex Chediek, who is the author of Thriving at College. When I went to college, we were sitting there, and the administrator comes in, and he looks at everyone. He says, well, take a look at the person next to you, because by the time you graduate, you're not going to see that person anymore. There's a lot of dropout right within colleges. So the question is, how can we thrive at college so we're not one of those people?
Yeah, you know, college is this really significant period of life where you're on the threshold of adulthood. And most of us enter college under our parents' care and their financial support. And if it's done right, we'll graduate as men and women ready to assume an adult role in an interdependent society. But I think what has to happen there is we need to take the bull by the horns, as it were. We need to take responsibility for our life, for our time management, for our faith, for our character development, our academic development, and really make the transitions from high school to college properly. Otherwise, we could really get blown away by some of the changes that come our way. For example, in high school, you have high accountability. Your parents are watching over you. You're in school most of the day. In college, you're actually not in class nearly as much as you are in high school, but you're expected to do twice as much work outside of class. Academically, unless you have good habits, you can get blown away. Spiritually, you're going to be around people who might be seeking to pull you into a different lifestyle than you were raised to obey, in a non-Christian lifestyle, things that you know are violating your conscience and disobeying Scripture. So you have to have a good moral framework to keep yourself. Intellectually, maybe finding people telling you things like Christianity is ridiculous, you can't possibly believe that stuff. Food tolerance means that what's true for you isn't true for me. Mm. So you need to really have your bearings set and be able to grow in your faith intellectually to know what you believe and why you believe it so that you can stand firm in that environment. So spiritually, academically, socially, there's lots of different pressures that can knock a person over.
Mm. Is I guess one of the biggest problems with college is just the word freedom. And you touched on it there. I mean, you're suddenly away from your parents. You're on your own. It's like taking a calf in the springtime and you let it out in the pasture. It starts running around. It gets all kinds of trouble, right?
Right. So I use the word freedom and responsibility. Well, what's important is to recognize that they need to come together. So with freedom comes responsibility. With opportunity comes danger. So on the plus side, there's opportunity. On the negative side, there's danger. So I think what has to happen is as the student goes to college, what's so important is that they internalize the faith for themselves. In other words, their spiritual habits are the overflow of their own walk with God and not what their parents are making them do.
Mm.
You know, if we're privileged enough to be raised in a Christian home, we end up going to our church because our parents drive us there. And we have somebody kind of help us get spiritual habits in place. But then what hopefully happens over the time of our high school years, especially, is that we own those things for ourselves. We develop and internalize the values that our parents handed down to us, and they become our own values. Mm. So those then influence how we approach school. We realize that this is an opportunity that God has given us to develop our intellectual abilities, to harness our skills, and prepare for a lifetime of service to Him in whatever area He calls us to be, whether that be law, engineering, medicine, biology, history, what have you. So we see the school is an opportunity to steward the gifts that God's given us and to steward them well. But I think that's important for a student to have that framework going into the experience.
They may be really challenged when they go into a classroom and the professor's really, his goal is, and I've heard this before, to degrade Christianity, to tell them that it's not true. In fact, the assignments that you get might go completely against some of your Christian principles. How do you handle that?
Right. I think there's some basic apologetic training that can go on in the high school or early college years to be able to respond to things like, how can you believe the Bible when it's full of errors? Well, actually, if you try to find contradictions in the Scripture, you really won't find them. They're all resolvable if you look more carefully at the different texts. Or things like Christianity is intolerant and there's no such thing as absolute values. Well, statements like that themselves imply an absolute value and imply a knowledge of an absolute value, which contradicts the claim that there are no absolute values.
Mm.
So there are responses and intellectual arguments that we can help Christians with so that they can stand firm in those environments. I think it's also helpful to encourage young people to realize they don't have to change everybody in their midst. I think sometimes Christians go into a secular college and they try to challenge a professor in front of 100 people. That's not really necessary to do. What's helpful in those environments, I think, when you know it's a hostile environment, and you know the professor has animosity towards the faith, it's helpful oftentimes, I found it helpful, to just learn and understand where that person's coming from, and then to ask gentle, gracious questions like, how do you handle this, or how do you, what do you claim is the source of morality? If you don't have a God or a Bible, what is your source of morality? And just to hear how they respond to things and to kind of show the weaknesses of their perspective as well. Even as they're examining your perspective, you have every right to examine theirs in a gracious, humble manner. And then it helps to realize that just as you have assumptions that you've inculcated from your youth, they have assumptions as well. Assumptions that there is no God, assumptions that there is no basis for absolute morality. These are assumptions that they're making, and if you examine those, they actually have a lot less credibility than the Christian assumptions.
Mm. I try to do it in a very Christian-like manner, but by the same token is, you need the grade. I guess the choice would be whether to keep going with the class or not, but if you need the class and, do the assignment, get the grade, and then move on.
Right. And I find that a lot of my experience, at least, was that if professors know where you're coming from, and you're not going to publicly seek to embarrass the professor, they usually are okay with it. And yes, there is, in some cases, discrimination against Christians in classes. But I think it's best to assume the best of your professor. You know, I had an atheist professor in my philosophy class when I was in college, and I remember having private conversations with him, telling him that, you know, I believed in Christianity, and he would tell me that he didn't. And I would write my papers, and if I got a low grade, I would go to him and say, hey, how can I do a better job? I wouldn't assume that he was criticizing me because I was a Christian. I think he respected that. He helped me to become a better writer, a better thinker, and I eventually got better grades in his class because I didn't attack him and say, well, you're just out to get me because I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
I think it's better to just say, look, how can I learn from you even though you're different from me? You know, we have in the Bible the example of Daniel in Babylon, who was in a godless place, and he was committed to living for Yahweh in that environment and following the law as God had prescribed it to be followed. And God honored him. He was able to rise and gain the respect of those in Babylon.
Mm. That is that's one of the hard things that you have to take these classes that that are required, and there's no way around it. I mean, you know, I know some colleges require, you know, the different world religions, where you have to learn the different religions and be respectful of them.
Right.
But you have to do it from a Christian perspective. That's for sure.
Right. Exactly. I think a Christian student is able to do that in a way that honors God, and to be fair to the other faith and say, this is what this faith believes, and this is what Christianity believes, and here's where they disagree.
Mm. One of the issues that you're going to be confronted with, no doubt, in college, whether it's, you know, you're still living at home and going to a campus locally, or if you're living on campus, is that's dating, because you're going to meet a lot of different people. And you know, high school was the same way. But here again, it's a little bit more freedom, and you have to really have to be careful now, don't you?
Yeah. I think there's a couple of different dangers that exist today. Some students pair off way too fast. They arrive on campus with an eagle eye for the opposite sex. And before too long, they're spending every waking moment with Mr. or Miss Wonderful. It's as if they feel like they've met Mr. or Miss Perfect, and they've only known him for 3 weeks. And what happens is they don't really know him as well as they think they know him. They have an idea of this perfect person, and they're importing this idea onto the person. And aside from the fact that spending every waking moment with a new boyfriend or girlfriend can cause enormous amount of sexual temptation, what happens is it tends to dwarf their social, academic, and spiritual life, because all of a sudden their entire free time is revolving around this new person, and they aren't able to as readily develop other friendships, other healthy relationships in their life. So having boundaries and having a pace for these new relationships, I think, is very important. Some people go the opposite way. So what I just described with people that are too, what I say, romance-oriented. They get a girlfriend, a boyfriend as their freshman year, and they're spending every waking moment as if they're already married to that person. That's too romance-oriented. On the opposite side, you have some that don't want any relationships, that all they want to do is not get too close to any guy or girl, but yet they want to have as much sexual gratification as possible through these short-lived hookup relationships that are common on secular campuses, and they're nothing other than mutual abuse and training camps for future divorces.
Yeah.
But they provide a cheap, short thrill, and yet they don't provide any emotional satisfaction. So you have both dangers going. Both extremes do occur, and I think the balanced perspective is to realize that the possibility of marriage in the future should be the overarching theme of any dating relationship that occurs on the campus. Marriage is the institution that God envisioned, in which our deepest desires for intimacy, both emotional intimacy and physical intimacy, can find their fulfillment. So if believing students have that perspective as, I'm going to marry someday, God's going to satisfy my deepest longings in that marriage for emotional intimacy, for physical intimacy. Now, my relationship with this boy or girl that is interesting to me is seen in that light. It's seen as if we're testing the waters to see if maybe God would have us marry one another. Mm. That gives purpose to the relationship. That gives focus. That also gives perspective and moral guidelines around the relationship. And it keeps it from going too fast, too early, too fast, getting to know each other too well, too quickly.
Mm. Well,
it's important to take time for each of them to develop individually. When you're 18, 19 years old, you still are figuring out who you are as an individual.
Mm.
You know, you're figuring out what your major is. You're making your friends. And it's important, I think, to do that as an individual Christian and not as, well, I'm already this guy's boyfriend, so I need to do everything with him. You don't need to do everything with that person. You can get to know him casually over a period of years. There's no rush to become too close to that person.
Yeah, you're right. It's tough to navigate those waters. But, you know, college, you know, is an extension on one level of high school, and on one level it's not. The extension of high school is the cliques and the gossip and, of course, the dating, but taken to another level. And the other is the academics and the responsibility. And again, it's tough to really, for a lot of these kids, make that adjustment.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why one thing I talk about in my book is being intentional in relationships. I think that's a very important thing, that college students be intentional as to who they choose as their close friends. Because Proverbs 13:20 says, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise.
Mm.
The companion of fools will suffer harm. An inescapable principle that we will become like those who we're with. So I think it's helpful to not just be a passive follower and hang out with whoever wants to hang out with you, but actually think to yourself, what character qualities do I want to be true in my life? And then seek out friends who possess those qualities, at least in seed form, and who value the things that you value and have the same worldview as you do. And then you can reinforce one another and strengthen one another.
Yeah.
And then out of that group of companions, you can meet the right kind of guys and girls that could be a good potential spouse for you down the road.
Well, Alex, your book, Thriving at College, is very timely for me. I'll have a son here in the fall that'll be attending college. And I guess one of the questions that I would have as a parent is what my role is in all this. I don't want to be overbearing. I want to be able to let the leash go, as it were. But by the same token, I want to be able to nurture still and give advice to my son. When do I overstep my boundaries?
It's a great question. You know, I think some parents nowadays, what we see, I'm a college professor, and what we often see is parents doing things for their kids that we did for ourselves, filling out applications for them, choosing what classes they should take, telling them when to study for this class or another. So I see parents doing things for kids that kids really used to do on their own. I've had students admit to me that their parents used to check their homework so thoroughly in high school that they never learned how to check it themselves.
Mm.
So I think as parents, you know, to answer your question that you asked, I think part of letting go is helping the young adult choose things for themselves. When a young adult asks you for your input, that the way in which a parent gives it in a way that I'm here, I'm advising you, I'm giving you input here, but this decision you're making, as long as it's an amoral decision. If it's should I go to history class or should I take history or should I take math? We don't want to make those decisions for our children. We want to help them and empower them to make them for themselves, so that they can grow in their ability to exercise responsibility, to if necessary make decisions, but also to learn from any mistakes they make, rather than expecting other people to fix up things that they mess up. If they do make a mistake, it's actually part of their learning to make a mistake, experience the consequences, and to make better choices in the future. So I think part of letting go is letting the child decide things for themselves that used to be decided for them.
Yeah.
Especially on issues where the Bible doesn't give a clear moral answer. The child will learn how to exercise wisdom.
Well, it'll help a little bit if we start this in high school.
Oh, absolutely. Know?
Give them a little bit more responsibility. I you know, I got to tell you, Alex, I've known people that have, you know, taken off work, taken a vacation or an extended vacation so they can sit down and search scholarships for their kids and fill out all their work for all the paperwork and visit the colleges themselves. And while some of that could be good, you've got to give that kid some of the responsibility. He's going to get into college and be completely lost.
Exactly. I think it's one thing that a parent does it with the child. That the parent does it for the child, that's something else.
Yeah,
I think what's important is that the child understands that, hey, mom and dad are here to help me, but this is really my future. This is my decision. This is my adult life that I'm embarking on. One example that I use in the book is, I know a family that hired a 21-year-old college student to do some odd jobs around the house, and the student would come over, fix the automobile, change the oil, mow the lawn, kind of odd jobs here and there. Occasionally, this young man's mother will call my friend and say, Joe can't come today. He has a big exam in school, so he's not going to come over and help you with the lawn today. And see, when they do that, they're actually perverting Joe's ability to make choices himself, because Joe told the family he was going to go over there. But not now the mom intervenes and says, mm-hmm. No, Joe is too busy. He can't come over there.
Yeah.
What does that teach Joe about responsibility?
Yeah, not much.
Exactly. So.
Yeah. Boy, there's so many things that we got to keep in mind as we go into college as young adults. And I know even now, and this is something that you're probably going to see more and more with the economy the way it is a lot of these young kids are going to be experiencing classes with older adults. You know, that's going to be quite a dynamic in some of our colleges, especially the local community colleges, right?
Right, right. We are seeing people take longer to graduate and more students working part-time jobs while they're in school. One of the things I talk about in the book is if you're a full-time student, it really is a full-time job.
Yeah.
Because if you're in school, let's say you're in class 15 hours a week, which is actually low. Most students are in school, are in class in college 16 to 18 hours a week. Let's just use a round number of 15. You're actually expected to do 30 hours a week of work out of class. The rule is about 2 hours out of class for every 1 hour in class. So if you're in class 15 hours a week, you should be doing work out of class 30 hours a week. So right there, that's 45 hours a week. That's a full-time job.
Yeah.
But I find that a lot of students don't recognize that fact. So they show up in class on Monday. They come for an hour. They leave. They come back on Wednesday for another hour. And they haven't done anything between Monday and Wednesday. Mm. I tell them, you're already behind. So I gave a bunch of homework between Monday and Wednesday. Whether or not something's actually going to be due on Wednesday is secondary importance. You were supposed to be reading the book, following material outside of class so that you understand what's happening in class.
Mm.
But they haven't had the time. Some of them are working so many hours at Starbucks or at Wendy's, they don't have time to do their homework. So maybe what needs to happen in those cases when a student has to work 20, 30 hours a week to support themselves is maybe they have to take fewer classes and graduate more slowly.
Yeah.
In order to do it well and get their money's worth out of the investment. Because if you just go into class and you aren't doing the work out of class, you aren't going to be learning as much as if you were.
Yeah, you know, it brings up another point is then they'll use, I can't go to church this week because I've got a lot of studying to do. It's like, well, why don't you do it during the week, you know, and use that. And I can see that happening with a lot of kids telling their parents or their other buddies, I can't go to church. I got an exam coming up. I really need to study for this. Not a very good excuse.
Right, exactly. And I find oftentimes those excuses are used because they spend Saturday with their friends all day long, and now all of a sudden Sunday comes, they realize, oh, no, I'm behind on my exam for Monday.
Yeah.
So you're right. It's the college of the time where they need to learn to have priorities, to say, okay, I'm going to go to church on Sunday morning. I'm going to make sure I get 7-8 hours of sleep every night. I'm going to study 30 hours a week and go to class 15 hours a week and have this other time for my friends. I think it's so important for a student to set a schedule,
mm-hmm.
to schedule their priorities, to say, look, this is my week, Monday through Sunday. I have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'm going to be in class these hours. I'm going to be in the library these hours. I'm going to be, and these hours are for my friends. I have to carve out intentionally some recreation time that's important, but then don't let the recreation become all-consuming, where I have to have every fun thing that comes along, I have to go do it. Because if you do that, you're never going to get your work done.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I got to tell you, Alex, this is a great book, and it not should only be read by kids going to college, but also the parents. The parents need a heads up on this because college has changed so much since a lot of the parents went, and this is a great refresher for the parents, and they'll learn a lot from this and for the students.
Yeah.
What
yeah,
have
and
we?
I hope that,
yeah, go ahead.
I hope the parents will buy it and then read it with their kids, maybe even as their kids are seniors in high school. It's a great time for the parent and the child to reading it together and talking about it.
Well, you know what? Get it as a freshman. And
yes.
And that way they can start getting some of these skills and some of the mindset they need as they head into college. It'll really give them a good heads up, especially when it comes to the sleep and scheduling and everything else.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, what have we missed here, Alex? What would you like to add?
I think we covered just about the whole thing. I mean, I wrote this book because I really want to help students transition well. college should be a launching pad into all that goes with Christian adulthood. For some, it's a time when they abandon their faith and they never really return. For others, their faith remains intact. And this is what I wanted to say. Sometimes it's Christians who don't lose their faith in college, but live that college experience in a frivolous manner as a season of entertainment, recreation, amusement, basically an expensive vacation funded by mom, dad, and student loans. And what I want to say to them is, look, college is a season in which you are called to glorify God with your mind and with your heart. And when you study for your classes, you are honoring God because you're developing your intellectual gifts. God calls us to be faithful in little, and then he gives us more responsibility. So just doing your homework is an act of worship to God. Oftentimes, Christian students think that homework has to be endured and that Christian ministry happens only on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
But God calls us to glorify him Monday through Friday in the work that he gives us to do. And as students, your work is being a student. That is your work, to glorify God in your work. Mm. It'll help you to launch well into adulthood. It'll help you to prepare well in college and get the skills you need in order to be able to be fruitful and productive for God for the next 60 years.
Mm. Very good, Alex. Where can we get this book at?
You can get this book at Tyndale.com. You can get it at Amazon.com. You can go to my website, alexchebiak.com. That's Alex, C-H-E-D like David, I-A-K.com. We have a group discount at my website. Barnes & Noble has it, christianbook.com. Basically, anywhere you buy books, the book will be there. Called Thriving at College by Tyndale House Publishers.
It should be in the college bookstore. That's where it should be, Alex.
A lot of colleges do have it. I have been told that a lot of colleges are stocking it right now.
Oh, that's great.
Have it for next year.
Oh, excellent. Well, it's been a pleasure. Blessings to you and your ministry. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it very much.
Take care. Alex Chediak, he's an author, a speaker, an associate professor of engineering and physics at California Baptist University, and his book is Thriving at College. Really a good resource as you're preparing for college, and I know a lot of kids getting out of school here in just a couple of weeks. Hard to believe with the weather we've been having. It doesn't seem like summer's around the corner, but apparently it is. That's going to do it for today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we will talk with Barbara Marlowe along with Teba, and we've got a great conversation with them. I hope you'll join me for that. Talk about Teba's recovery and what she's been up to, and also on Friday's program, June Hunt. So, Hope in the Night, overnights here on WHKW, her newest book called Hope for Your Heart, and then Knowing God, Knowing Myself, and we'll talk with Cecil Murphy. A lot more coming your way here on WHKW. Bishop Joy Johnson is next. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Talk to you tomorrow morning, bright and early, on AM 1220, The Word.